are back with episode 654 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and just remember, you can't believe everything you read on the... Oh, wait a minute, maybe this time.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and yes, sometimes the truth is true.
Sometimes the truth is true, and sometimes it is out there. Really, really out there. Like in some of these news articles that we have, which we're about to get into from the past week. There's actually been quite a lot. And it's good to finally have a full slate of episodes. We're going to have quite a bit of episodic discussion later this week. And there are a couple open topics. One doozy of one that I can't wait to hear from Gary on. But anyway, before we get started with any of that this week, Edmund, our usual news disclaimer.
Absolutely. We usually try to warn you that we're going to spoil you with things you don't want to know, but it's the beginning of the week, so it's the news show, so we are hoping you will be delighted with all the things that you don't know that we're about to tell you.
That's right. And we're going to start off here with what could be an interesting topic in and of itself. And Gary, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes. And I just as a side note, I am well on the side of this, and I'm looking forward to it. What we're talking about is DC has announced a new line of comic books based on a variety of Hanna-Barbera lines. For those who actually might not know Hanna-Barbera, they were an extremely successful cartoon shop in the 60s that put out a plethora of characters. Some might be called knockoffs. Others were refreshingly original. This can range anywhere from Scooby-Doo, which you might be most familiar with, through other properties such as Space Ghost, Johnny Quest, Birdman, as well as some of the Flintstones and many, many other properties. DC has announced that they are going to pursue these. I never got the sense from reading the promos that this is meant to be a youth-orientated or a very young young range of comic books, but rather something that will appeal to, our average comic book viewer. It's not meant to be a dumbed-down thing. They're working at the moment on four main series, the first being the Flintstones, as imagined by Amanda Connor, who does amazing artwork. The second is Scooby Apocalypse, where, geez, if I didn't know any better, it's almost a, I don't know if it's going to be a zombie piece or what it is, but it is going to be taking place in apocalyptic near future Badlands. So definitely a reimagining of Scooby. And the one that I'm most excited about is the title called Future Quest, which, as you could guess from the name, is going to bring back Johnny Quest, his sidekick Haji, as well as the whole team that we're used to, his father, Dr. Benton Quest, as well as Race Bannon, and some more characters along the way. And it's supposed to also include some of those Hanna-Barbera classics of Space Ghost, Birdman, Mitor, and as we start to get a little bit more, down the B list of characters, as well as the Herculoids, which I'm very much looking for. I miss Glop and Gleep a lot. And then finally rounding it out is the title called Wacky Raceland. And, geez, it's sort of a villain's cannonball run, I guess, for lack of a better term. And but this is also going to be set in a sort of apocalyptic wasteland full of nanotech dust storms and cannibalistic mutants. And during that background, these people have to race for survival between two points. So I forget what they'd actually called the series at the time when it was running as a cartoon, but the comic book will be called Wacky Raceland. And I know a lot of my friends have been really thrilled about it, especially, as I said, the Johnny Quest, the Herculoids, and seeing Space Ghosts come back again. So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm sure all of you guys are old enough to remember at least a few of these in passing. And what are your thoughts on some of these characters?
Let's see. Well, I can't really say for myself whether or not it any specific one that really jumps out at me. What I'm kind of taken by is the very or shall I say the opposing response that I've heard from amongst the interwebs, where they think that this is absolutely ludicrous. But for me, it's like, why don't they go ahead and try and do something different?
Well, you know, I think it falls under that sort of, don't touch the sacred comic books of the past, or, don't play with the toys. You're only allowed to look at them now. You can't take them out and play with them. And geez, there might be rare exceptions where I agree, but this certainly isn't one of them. I think many of these characters, could be reintroduced to a new audience, and while the names might have They know the names. They really don't know the characters or people or storylines anymore. And I like putting a slightly new twist on these characters. They're starting to fade into obscurity, so I would rather have them be dusted off and used again rather than forgotten.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was kind of intrigued, actually, when you were saying about fading into obscurity, that, Gary, as you were going through, that the one you almost threw in at the end was the Flintstones, which for me was the one that is probably highest in my memory banks as a youth. I mean, certainly that and Johnny Quest. And personally, seeing some of this artwork and the way they are updating them, modernizing them, whatever spin you want to put on it, I'm actually kind of intrigued to see what they do. I mean, I think we may have reached the point where certainly with the Flintstones, it's sort of far enough back to where they probably can reintroduce them, and at least in terms of some of the copy they're talking about giving new twists and interpretations on how civilization developed back in the early days. I'm willing to give them at least a wait and see what they come up with on this one, rather than condemning it outright.
Mm. Yeah, it's worth just seeing what it is. I mean, it's just like when we have people who, before a trailer even comes out, start condemning a film or a reboot or a remake, and it's like, well, at least let's see what it looks like first before we go crazy. All right, well, let's move on then to our traditional networks. And first off is some news out of Fox. And this is probably not that surprising, but it's kind of good to hear. The X-Files, when it returned to television on Fox, pulled in nearly double the viewership it had when it originally premiered back in 1993. Apparently, the premiere of the quote-unquote season 10 had about 13.5 million viewers, and that's supposed to be that's the early estimate. It could be very conservative, because once you take all of the various DVR numbers into account and everything else, it could be actually much higher than even that. And yeah, it's just... That's with, if you take into account the delayed viewings, it could match the ticket sales of the film itself, which ran during the height of the show's popularity. So essentially what this little article is saying here is that unlike some other, you know, returns, like, say, Heroes, that immediately tanked, the X-Files came back with massive numbers. Especially these days. I mean, that's the one thing that this article is not really getting into, is the fact that you're comparing almost apples to oranges, because there was a lot less competition back then compared to now. And yeah, for it to still get those kinds of numbers with all of the other things that could be getting in the way, so to speak, not a bad start. Granted, it also had a lead-in that, well, was controversial, shall we say. The NFC Championship game, I believe, which ran a little longer than it should have, and some people got up in arms, but we'll leave that alone.
Yes.
Yes. Edmund, this next one out of ABC is interesting.
Yeah, this is news that time after time, the Nicholas Meyer movie from the late 70s, I believe, came out in 78 or 79. A fabulous film. Anybody who hasn't seen it should rush out and see it. It starred Malcolm McDowell as H.G. Wells, and was based on the conceit that he, in fact, had actually invented a time machine, not just written a novel about it. And Jack the Ripper, played by David Warner, basically got his hands on it and escapes to 1979 San Francisco with Wells hot in pursuit. So a fabulous premise, it's the two of them dueling with H.G. Wells getting help from Mary Steenburgen's character, developing some wonderful on-screen chemistry, since they were in fact basically falling in love and got married soon after the film. There is apparently talk about it getting turned into a television series. Kevin Williamson, who worked on The Following, is writing the pilot and executive producing. Was first announced in September, now has an actual pilot order. Basically, they're just taking the idea, primarily the idea of Wells having his time machine and chronicling his adventures. So, you know, yes, not necessarily chasing Jack the Ripper, but to whoever else he might have had to take off after. As this article does mention, of course, the idea of a quirky traveler with a female companion might be something we've seen a few times, or 29, 30 times before. But
just a few. All right. Well, coming out of, I think the next one here is, yes, coming out of the CW is an interesting little one here. Apparently, they are going to be trying their hand at the same territory that Penny Dreadful is putting out or playing in. They want to put out a show called Transylvania. It's been picked up for a pilot order, so some casting news will be coming along fairly soon. It's going to be executive produced by Jeff Pinkner, Josh Applebaum, Andrea Nepnick, and Scott Rosenberg. Oddly enough, these are all people who have been associated with various shows that we've talked about over the years, some very good and some not so good, but their most recent effort was the summer series Zoo. Which, granted, is coming back for a second season, but it's
yes, but just because you're a CBS summer series that's coming back for a second season doesn't really say much at this point.
No, it really doesn't say much at all. This show is supposed to be set in the 1880s. Boy, that sounds familiar, doesn't it, after the last one? Mm-hmm. Anyway, and follows a headstrong young woman in search of her missing father who ventures from New York City to Transylvania, where she teams up with a wrongfully displaced Scotland Yard detective, and together they witness the births of the most famous monsters and villains in history.
Okay, so they're cribbing from Penny Dreadful and the Dracula series that didn't go anywhere.
Yes, this would be set technically 10 years before Penny Dreadful, so I guess you could see it as a softer prequel.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. Depending on how you want to look at it. Anyhow, also coming out of the CW is this news from Gary.
Oh yes, yes, they've announced that they're introducing yet another new show and. There we go. There are my notes. What they're announcing is Archie is coming to television, not as a cartoon, but as a live action drama. Now I guess we could call him a mastermind or the definitely one of the more popular producers, Greg Berlanti from both Arrow and Flash and Supergirl fame is tackling Riverdale. According to the official definition of what they're planning, Riverdale offers a bold, subversive take on Archie, Betty, Veronica, and their friends, exploring the surrealistic twists of small-town life, plus the darkness and weirdness bubbling beneath Riverdale's wholesome facade. Set in the present fictional small town of Riverdale, New York, it will focus on the eternal love triangle of Archie Andrews, Betty Cooper, and Veronica Lodge, and will include the entire cast of characters from the comic books, including Archie's rival, Reggie, and his slacker best friend, Jughead. The popular gay character, Kevin Keller, will also play a pivotal role in the series. They will be also expanding throughout Archie's... outside of Archie's core group of characters to include Josie and the Pussycats as well. they are expecting to release casting soon, and if all goes well, Riverdale will be on the air by the fall of 2016.
Mm. Wow.
Okay. Interesting. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
It's been a perennial comic book series. It isn't a superhero series, but you know, for a lot of people, they enjoy the sort of social interaction that these characters have, and it's nice that comic books aren't all superheroes. And this is probably one of the best examples, or at least the most popular of that genre, where you're not dealing with superheroes and villains and things like that. And sometimes they're very moralistic. Sometimes they're just kids hanging out and. I would like to think that they could do justice to it. I have high hopes given the producer that as I look at this, I almost sort of want to think of how he's handling Supergirl. But when they start mentioning things like darkness and weirdness bubbling beneath and calling it a drama.
Yeah,
I don't want to say I'm concerned, but I'm curious how they're going to do that. I would never picture Archie to be a dark show, and while there have been some comic books lately that have delved into the Riverdale universe in a dark manner, particularly Life After Archie, if you've read that series at all, which is sort of how all the characters deal with Archie dying, I guess I sort of can see where they might want to go, but geez, I mean, you know me, typically I like to have some happy stories on the air, and hearing dark and troubling things, it does concern me a bit, but I'd like to see this franchise actually break out of its popularity and get more popular. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, that is. It looks like I'm at yellow alert. Okay, good. Okay. It's clear. Anyway,
that was some of that dark weirdness just bubbling to the surface there, Gary.
But so I really do hope they do justice. You know, Archie's been around for, I'm going to just roughly guess over 50 years at this point. And I never had the sense that it's really gone mainstream. Yeah, people, you might say Archie, and just people might have a past idea, and but it'd be nice to see this show actually, you know, actually take off a little bit, and Archie receive a little bit more notoriety. It's the characters are, you know, are pretty well based, and while they are stereotypes to some extent, at least growing up as a kid, it gave you a sense of like how people deal with other people and the types of people out there. And kids especially don't necessarily have a chance to get that exposure. So it's nice to see these different character types in a sort of a safe setting, being in my case, the page, but on a screen as well might be fun. I'm also concerned that it might go a little too soap opera-ish as I hear Eternal Love Triangle, but that is Archie to begin with. It's a core part of the mythos. So it looks like, I'm hoping they don't stray too much, but we'll have to see. Like I said, dark concerns me, but I mean, you always got to have some hook with these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out. I mean, I doubt they're going to go quite as far as, say, the Hanna-Barbera stuff was going to go. So, or is going to go. Moving then over to the, this was big news this week, and kind of surprising considering some previous announcements, but going to the online and alternative networks, Edmund.
Yes, it's sort of become this monthly ritual of where all these websites will publish what is going to be showing up on Netflix next month, and also what is going to be leaving. And unfortunately for the U.S. Netflix subscribers, as of, by the time this goes out, as of February 1st, the new modern episodes of Doctor Who will no longer be available. That's everything from Christopher Eccleston's Ninth Doctor through Matt Smith's departure. So catching up on Doctor Who isn't necessarily going to be quite so easy. However, since we are also entering election season, which I know we don't usually get political, but since this is the time of year when lots of people will start talking about, oh, if something happens, I'm going to move to Canada, they will still be available for UK and Canadian subscribers to Netflix. So if you absolutely have to get your Doctor Who fix through Netflix, that's where you can head off to now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to know. But there may be some hope eventually, from what I can understand. Gary, maybe there's a rumor out there?
Yes, sir. The, as I will use the term, the balkanization of online viewing is rumored to continue. BBC is being quiet, but at the same time, they're also suggesting that they'll be offering some type of new service that will offer a wide range of programs of various genres and eras. And with BBC's, saying extensive is almost a misnomer, but their extensive catalog, one can only imagine with recent news, as we reported in just the last news story, that Doctor Who won't be returning to Netflix or Hulu. We can only imagine that BBC is going to roll out basically their own independent viewing platform, and what the pay structure or the contents of it will be at this point are pretty mum as far as BBC is concerned. As a side note, they will still be streaming, I believe, the current series through BBC America, which means it will still be showing up on Amazon and Google Play and some other platforms. But it's yet another sort of defection along the line. I shouldn't say defection, but a separation, just like CBS is doing, HBO has done, and several other channels as they start to peel off from the buckets that are Netflix and Hulu and realize that they can do it on their own for $6.99 or whatever fee they're going to charge you per month. So this sort of is another death knell in traditional television, at least as far as I'm concerned. You're really, as you start to pay all these different subscription fees, you don't really need cable anymore, and you really don't have to watch current television either. So it's interesting what's going to happen. Although I'm concerned because while the sort of buckets of Netflix and Hulu are extremely convenient and honestly, even for what they do charge, cost affordable, as I see every sort of network start to charge, you know, anywhere from $6 to $12 per network, I can't see many people subscribing to more than a handful at those rates. And there's gonna be a lot of smaller stations that are gonna die out, I think, because they're not being propped up under these larger sort of umbrellas.
That's my biggest concern as well. But go ahead, Edmund.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I mean, you know, there's been this call for years of people saying, oh, I want to have a la carte ordering on my cable service, and the counter economic argument of, you know, no, that the networks negotiate for all of these packages, you know, so that yes, they can basically support these networks with smaller ratings, but with the ones with the larger ratings. And it almost feels now that it doesn't look like the cable industry will ever go a la carte, but we're kind of getting the equivalent in a la carte streaming. And a lot there were the folks who looked at it and said, a la carte isn't going to save you any money, because that was always people's hope. It's like, I'm paying for 300 channels, I only watch 20, I only want to pay for 20. And it's like, well, no, you can pay for 20, but you're still going to be paying the same as you paid for those 300.
Mm-hmm. For your 20, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I think, the biggest concern for me is that you're gonna wind up having way too many. You're gonna have a lot less for your buck when all is said and done, is what it's really coming down to. All right. The other side of the coin is that at least some of these outlets, the irony is that they're coming up with their own content.
Yes.
So they're, you know, as the balkanization continues, there's Netflix, of course, is just killing it with their own original programming. Amazon is certainly trying to do the same thing, and Hulu is trying to do the same thing as they get traditional stuff taken away from them. And oddly enough, feature films, the big name films, are actually starting to show up on Hulu now, so they are getting some credibility on that level as well. But anyway, they are finalizing deals for pilot orders to Citizen, a supernatural drama from me and Earl and the Dying Girl director Alfonso Gomez Rejon.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. And When the Streetlights Go On, adapted from the Blacklist feature script by writers Chris Hutton and Eddie O'Keefe, sources say. Both projects hailing from Paramount Television and anonymous content and stem from the two companies' first look deal. Citizen is described as a fresh take on the hero origin story, blending elements of magical realism and gritty vigilantism set against the backdrop of a vibrant, supernaturalized Los Angeles. Sounds like something that Bronstein would be interested in.
Yeah. Yes. Also sounds like a certain plot line from Heroes Reborn, but maybe done properly.
Yes, right? One that you might actually remember, because I forgot that even happened. And When the Streetlights Go On... I'm trying to look here at what that is. Oh, it's a coming-of-age thriller about a sleepy suburban town that is rocked by the brutal murder of a high school girl and her teacher in the summer of 1983. So who knows what that will actually look like. It sounds like a little bit more traditional, even if a little bit murdery, but there we are.
Yeah, and nothing at all like Twin Peaks. But...
No. That is what came to mind, but I'm almost certain that's not what we're going to see coming out of that.
No.
So those are some interesting new things. And Gary, this is, once again, we were just talking about Netflix maybe carving out their own little empire here.
Yes, as they continue to introduce their own direct programming, because, as you said, of losing these different networks, plus sick of paying the franchises that have gone up, although I would still argue that they made out like a bandit for the first several years. Anyway, yes, Netflix and Warner Brothers Television has confirmed that the... fan favorite series Gilmore Girls will be returning with new episodes. Many of the actors that made the show famous are set to return, including Lauren Graham, Alex Bledel, and Scott Patterson. The title of the reboot series has not been formalized yet, but creator Sherman Palladino and Daniel Palladino will be writing and directing all of the Netflix episodes. So you'll definitely sort of have the favorite.
Did we lose Gary?
Yes. I think Gilmore Girls will be returning, but we hope Gary will too.
That's right. That's right. Wow. Okay. Well, in the meantime, while we wait to see what's going on there.
No, this makes complete sense now. Obviously, President Underwood wanted his time. I haven't given the spoiler alert yet, have I? this is naturally news about House of Cards. Even though season 4 has not in fact dropped yet, it has been renewed for season 5. However, showrunner Bo Willimon, who was basically the creator and, at least early on in the run, the primary writer for the show, will not be returning. He had been stepping back, and I'm sure, just as J. Michael Straczynski can attest, discovered just how difficult it was running the show and executive producing and writing most of the episodes. He had increasingly cut back from, I think it was 10 in the first season to 4 in season 3. And we don't know yet, since season 4 hasn't dropped, exactly how many he actually wrote for this season. He has been kind of pulling back from things. All I can say is I have too, since even though I'm aware how it wound up, I never actually finished season 3, so I maybe also be taking my graceful exit from the series now that the guy who basically got it going and provided most of the creative impetus is also stepping aside. And also, I will say personally, knowing and adoring the original British series, which was a limited 3-series run and very beautifully self-contained, I was finding the Netflix series increasingly annoying, especially in their inability to basically come up with a suitable foil for Mr. Spacey. It's a brilliant character, but he needs somebody to push against, and they haven't been giving him that.
That's unfortunate. I mean, that's what happens when you go beyond what the source material might be and start really trying to pave new ground just to keep it going. You've overextended yourself.
Yeah, and naturally, Bo Willimon's released a statement as well, that it's all very polite, etc. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of his own frustration of I just can't keep this going this long.
Hmm. Okay, let's see. Moving on there to movie news, as Gary in the background is rebooting his computer. Ha, it happens. Anyway, this is interesting. The Ghost in the Shell film, starring Scarlett Johansson, is moving from Disney to Paramount, who will be now co-financing the film. It's still set to be directed by Rupert Sanders, and Scarlett Johansson is still supposed to play the lead role. But there's no information as to why the switch was made, but maybe it's just not Disney-type material. I mean, this is a fairly well-known anime, and it is a little bit more on the mature side of things.
Absolutely.
When you get right down to it.
Yeah, that was my thought when it was first announced, and so I'm keeping my fingers crossed that this is one of those developments that is a good thing.
Yes, this could turn out to be better for everyone involved. It's still not going to stop people from complaining that Johansson is in the lead role, but
yes,
folks, get over it. From a purely financial point of view, I completely understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
You got to have somebody recognizable in the role that's actually going to be a troll across all kinds of demographics. That's what they're trying to do.
Yes.
Trust me.
Not to mention being known for playing a character who is a kick-ass action female lead, and she actually gets to do it in this film.
No, that clearly would not have anything to do with it at all. No, no. All right, well, Gary was going to take this next one, but I guess I will. It turns out that maybe Disney doesn't need to have Ghost in the Shell on their slate because, well, they're bringing us the dream, folks, whether we like it or not. Even more previously, unannounced Star Wars and Marvel films are coming. As they say here, when we were kids, our biggest dream was nonstop Star Wars and Marvel films all the time, and now Disney looks to give us exactly what we wanted. There are, 5 Star Wars films currently, 4 more with The Force Awakens, and they're in varying stages of development and production. But as Disney Chairman Bob Iger said, there will be more after that. I don't know how many. I don't know how often. Yes, we do. They're going to try and annualize it. They've said this already.
Mm-hmm.
And what about Marvel? Marvel, you're dealing with thousands and thousands of characters. That will go on forever. Is there? And when asked, couldn't we all get bored at this? No, I don't think anyone's getting weary. And then he points directly at the piles of money that are being generated by all these films.
Not to mention the fact that, especially on the Marvel side, it's like, they are not just turning out the same thing. They try something that everybody thought was silly, like Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's a blockbuster. They go dark and gritty on Netflix with Daredevil and Jennifer Jones, and yes, it's different, but it's still within the universe and still blows us away. So yeah, so based on the current track record, yes, they that pile of money will probably keep growing.
Yeah, and I'm thinking even something like Ant-Man that people were extremely skeptical about wound up making plenty of money.
Exactly.
Even if it was one of the lesser draws domestically, it was still considered a hit. So there's definitely not anywhere near Fantastic Four territory.
No.
As far as Star Wars goes, that's not surprising. Why? I mean, what did people think they bought the franchise rights for?
Yeah.
I mean, really. Star Wars is the kind of thing that it's shown its endurance. You can throw pretty much anything out there, and I think that somebody's going to adore it. If, you know, you can get some of the, some of those cartoon spinoffs. I'm not talking about Clone Wars or Rebels, but some of the other things that are out there, and that doesn't slake anybody's interest in it. Certainly, it's going to take a few films not hitting. I think we mentioned this before. It's going to take one of the major films completely flopping before anyone even starts to think, hey, do we have too much Star Wars? I mean, look at how many people got upset because Episode 8 was delayed by 7 months.
Yes, exactly.
7 months. And people were up in arms. And you were still getting
another film in between there.
Yes. I don't think anyone's going to be mind. It's going to take a while before that starts to sink in. If it was Lucas still doing it, maybe I could understand. But it's not, so.
Yeah.
All right, Edmund, the next one, please.
Yes. The long-rumored Blade Runner 2, actually, we don't know if that's what it's called, but the sequel to Blade Runner will apparently start production in July. As ever with things Blade Runner and Ridley Scott, that is about all we know. This is Alcon Entertainment confirmed the news in a press release. And we know that Warner Brothers will be distributing the film in North America and Sony Pictures International will handle the duties overseas. Just to reiterate, it's not Ridley Scott behind the camera, but Denis Villeneuve, the French-Canadian director who most recently did Prisoners. Harrison Ford will be back as Rick Deckard, joined by Ryan Gosling. Screenplay by Hampton Fancher, who was, of course, the co-writer on Blade Runner, and Michael Green. So, Ridley is, of course, there to executive produce, we do not know when it will be completed, and as I've mentioned before, I'm kind of holding my breath on this one. But this actually, I had forgotten that it was Villeneuve who's directing, and he's done some very interesting work up in his native Quebec. I will keep my fingers crossed that this could be as interesting and innovative as the original, if the director is allowed some latitude. Let's put it that way.
Maybe. All right, let's see here. Next on the list is Edmund. You're going to have to take this one as well.
Yes. The ongoing, speaking of the other sequel in Ridley Scott's universe, Alien Covenant, as it is now known, the sequel to Prometheus, Michael Fassbender is in fact returning as the evil robot, Noomi Rapace will not be. All of those, like myself, who were rather intrigued about the idea of seeing their ship fly off and that the sequels would be involving those their adventures, is in fact not going to happen. The sequel will actually take place 10 years after the events of Prometheus, we will basically just have to imagine their adventures kind of like some of us imagine Leda and Jakar off beyond and around the rim.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But that actually sounds a little bit like casting news.
It does indeed.
And so we are going to go on from the lack of casting news to actual casting news as we hear a little bit more about stars and their... hold on for a second here.
Yes, listeners, we are experiencing adventures in Skype.
Yes, we are. Unfortunately, I had a slight problem there. But we are back, and I'm about to bring Gary back on, hopefully. Why Skype doesn't just bring him back into the initial call, I don't know. But there we are. Gary, you are back.
Yes, in honor of Bronze Thumb, I figured someone should lose their connection at least once in our recordings.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, as I was saying in our casting news here, Stars in their American Gods adaptation has found its lead role of Shadow Moon, and it's going to be played by Ricky Whittle, who is perhaps best known to U.S. audiences for his role on The 100.
Yes, indeed.
So, yes, that's Lincoln. Actually a really good bit of casting right there. You were going to say something there, Edmund.
Oh, well, no. I was just saying he plays Lincoln, for those who do not know. But as we will be getting into later in the week, a very memorable character from the 100. And once again, I'm realizing, this is one of the, yes, dock me my geek credits, but I still have not read American Gods. So it is yet another addition to my stack of things that are being adapted that I need to finally read.
Yes. Yes, yes. We'll have to see about correcting this error.
Yes,
that's all right. You're usually the one who has read stuff, and we haven't, so we're letting this one slide.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but this is one of those bad ones where I've had it for the last 6 years and haven't gotten to it.
Yes, I know the feeling of the book that's been sitting on the shelf.
Yeah,
all too well. But you've got this next bit of casting news.
Yes, we have casting news from 24 Legacy, and that is that Miranda Otto, having just done a rather memorable turn on Homeland, is the, yes, spoilers, but as the CIA agent who was doubling with the Russians, she will play Rebecca Ingram, who is the blazing smart former head of CTU, now married to Senator John Donovan, and is struggling with second thoughts about having left counterterrorism agency or the counterterrorism agency. So yeah, sounds like as much of a loose cannon as she was playing on Homeland. I'm just realizing I'm not sure if this is. I'm not sure if you've had this news yet, but yeah, the spinoff will follow a young male operative named Eric Carter, and Miranda Otto's Ingram. Carter pulled back into action when his past comes looking for him, of course, eventually turns to CTU for help in saving his life and stopping, wait for it, a large-scale terrorist attack.
Of course.
And intent is to send it out as a limited-run series like Live Another Day, but it sounds like perhaps even more than with Live Another Day, they are kind of hoping that if there's lots of buzz and ratings, etc., it could be continued from that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not at all surprised. So that's the rubric that they're putting out there anyway. Gary.
Yes, sir. We have yet more casting news. Let's see. Yes. One of the Supergirl actresses has been cast in a series of unfortunate events. Calm down. It's not Melissa Benoist, but rather the other actress who plays young Kara on Supergirl, Melina Weissman, will be filling the role of Violet, with newcomer Lewis Hines, who will be cast as Klaus. Weissman is currently known for playing young Kara on the Supergirl TV show, and she recently made her film debut as the young April in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. There's still a lot of announcements to come out, but as they do make these casting casting announcements, people are starting to look forward to this more and more. The role that she's filling is an 11 to 14 year old girl, and she's going to help her brother and sister solve problems with her skills as an inventor. So this new series, as we've mentioned it before, is scheduled to start filming in March in Vancouver, of all places. Go figure. yet more news on as the series starts to unfurl.
All right, let's see here, and I believe that you also have the next one.
Yes, I do. This one is not quite so upbeat, I guess, but it's this is talking about casting for Fear the Walking Dead. They've recruited actor Daniel Zavato for its upcoming second season. He was in the last year's horror hit It Follows, and is going to be joining Kim Dickens, Cliff Curtis, Frank Delane, and Ruben Blades in the zombie prequel show. They haven't given any details as to who Zavato will be playing, so we'll just have to wait and see when season 2 comes out on April 10th.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Let's see here. Next on the list is Clive Owen has joined the sci-fi film Anon from the Gattaca director. Yes, apparently there is the film coming from director Andrew Niccol is set in the future during a time when privacy has disappeared. Owen will star as a detective who runs across a woman who doesn't exist, a hard feat to pull off in a world without anonymity. The mystery woman is yet to be cast, with this particular source noting that the role is expected to be filled in the next few weeks. So this is apparently, if I recall correctly, Andrew Nichols' kind of pet project. So we shall see if it turns out to be 3.5 hours long, as Brodstone has many times alluded. All right. And next on our list, Edmund.
Yes, this is news about Mr. Robot. In its second season, Grace Gummer, of course, most recently seen for our viewing on The Newsroom, will be joining the series as a regular. She will play Dominique Dom DePiero, a young FBI agent who's on the trail of F-Society following the hack of Evil Corp in the season one finale. I can well imagine that I'm going to make a prediction that her loyalties might be tested and maybe flung hither and yon in the course of that.
Quite possibly. Maybe. Can't imagine why you would think that would be true. Let's see. It is Mr. Robot after all. Yes. Gary, this last bit of casting news.
Oh, did I must have missed one?
Or I'll go ahead and take it. Okay, we have some news that a star from the film It Follows will be on Fear the Walking Dead.
No, we already had that one.
Zabato? I did that one.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah.
He skipped the other one when he was supposed to do the one.
Oh, see, this is what happens when I'm actually trying to read something else.
Oh, well let me take that one. I didn't realize. I was excited about the Fear the Walking Dead.
I'm getting the next show prepped. This is what happens. Okay.
No problem at all. What we're talking about is, yes, another bit of casting news. For the Marvel property, Dominic Fortune. Actor Delroy Lindo has been cast to play Dominic Fortune in the upcoming ABC series Marvel's Most Wanted. The series is planned as a spinoff of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is the Mockingbird / we're not allowed to say Hawkeye. Spin-off show, and he was based on a Howard Chaykin. He is a Howard Chaykin creation that debuted all the way back in 1975, and he's been a sort of a spy for hire, never really associated with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comic books, but definitely has had a nice run, but rather lacked in popularity. He was never used extensively. The actor himself, Mr. Lindo, is best known for his roles in Malcolm X, Point Break, Gone in 60 Seconds. He was a theater-trained actor, or is a theater-trained actor, and is scheduled to portray Marcus Garvey in an upcoming biography picture. So definitely he has a few irons in the fire, and I'm looking forward to that and glad that they're starting to really expand out through some of the Marvel Universe with some of the less known characters, and they're willing to take them on. They've been doing a very reasonable job, as I think of some of the other characters they pulled out of the comic books for TV shows, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, Delroy Lindo is definitely a great get for them. He's a wonderful actor, and but I just have to say I wasn't really aware of this Marvel character, but knowing it's from knowing Chaykin created him and looking at the art, it's obvious that yes, he may not have been popular in the Marvel series, but Howard obviously just recycled him and made him into American Flag.
Shh. Hush now. That's not true. They are completely unique characters. Yeah. See, one guy is wearing yellow.
Yes.
Where's blue?
Of course.
How much more different can they be?
Oh, boy.
Silly man. Oh, jeez. Yes.
All right. Well, we unfortunately have to end this one on a down note, although we did joke a little bit earlier on that this has been a bit of an internet meme for years now, and unfortunately, all things must eventually be true. So, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Yes. After all of this talk of all of the people we have lost this year, we must now officially, yes, truthfully report that Abe Vigoda has died at age 94. Of course, famous for his roles in The Godfather and on Barney Miller and the subsequent spinoff, Fish, where his character moved on to be primarily a foster parent. But he died Tuesday morning in his sleep. at his daughter's home in Woodland Park, New Jersey. I quite like this, that yes, for once, the cause of death was old age.
Mm. Well, it's better than some of the alternatives we've heard of late, so.
And I did enjoy the tagline I've seen where it says, "So long and thanks for all the fish," so.
Mm.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, on that note, we are going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. When we come back next time, we are going to be neck deep in some episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.